Understood is a resource I have recommended for many years to parents looking for support with learning and thinking differences such as ADHD, dyslexia, and more. And I'm subsequently excited to tell you about their podcast, Understood Explains. This season, the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. They cover topics such as how to tell if your child needs an IEP, common myths about special education, and the difference between IEPs and 504 plans. I love how Understood Explains breaks down the overwhelm by unpacking an important topic each season and then drilling down further into key basics in each episode. Most episodes are between 10 to 15 minutes, and episodes are available in both English and Spanish. So fantastic, right? To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of smart, compassionate guests, you will come away with insights and tactics to help you find the agency and space to simplify and declutter your home, time, mental space, and more. Hello, friends. I'm very excited about today's conversation. This podcast episode is the second in a two-part series on sex ed. It occurs to me I could have many more episodes on sex ed, and that might be in the cards. But meanwhile, if you haven't yet listened to How to Have Sex-Positive Conversations at Home with Melissa Pintor Carnegie, please go listen. This was broadcast last week and is such an incredible, compassionate conversation. And I think it will leave you with more confidence than you might imagine. Now, today, I'm excited to welcome Dr. Rachel Gibson, also known as Dr. G, to the show. Dr. G is a health and sexuality educator, trainer, and consultant, and also the co-host of the Sex Ed in the City podcast. The idea for this show came to me after fielding questions offline with someone who shared their school's sex ed curriculum with me and asked about my thoughts, and also mentioned that they were concerned about the subject material and were wondering about opting out. I had a very strong positive reaction to that curriculum, as well as some watchouts for this person that I shared with them directly. And I realized in doing so that it would be helpful to get an expert on the mic to talk about this really important topic, both from a content lens and also to get advice on what to do if you are concerned about your school's curriculum. Let's have a listen. Hello and welcome, Dr. G. I'm so excited to have you on the mic today. Hi.
Hi. I'm so excited to be here with you. Oh, gosh. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is a long overdue catch up and also an informative conversation for everybody else who's listening. And as I mentioned in the intro, and as was discussed in my conversation last week with Melissa Pintor Carnegie, sometimes parents and caregivers are worried about sex ed starting too early. I'm jumping right in here, Dr. G.
Do it.
And
yes.
The thing that's concerning about that sometimes is it makes them want to possibly opt out of the sex ed curriculum as a result. And this question is actually a direct result of an offline conversation I had with somebody asking me about to review their sex ed curriculum and like, what did I think about it? Just kind of friend to friend. So can you tell me your thoughts about the ideal age for in-school sex ed curriculum and why it matters?
Yeah. Well, first of all, in life, we should be having sex ed from, you know, the cradle to the grave, starting with ed families. But I think what gets people hung up about when should it start is just the word sex, right? And there's a misconception that in first grade, we're showing kids how to use condoms, right? And that's not what it is. So really, when we're talking about kindergarten, pre-K, first grade, what we're talking about is consent, how to be a good friend, how to say, yes, you can borrow my pencil, or no, you can't, or let's be friends, or can I have a hug, or this is the name of my body part, like this is my elbow, this is my toe, this is my vulva, right? So it's not any kind of like intercourse description or how to at any grade, mm-hmm. let alone in those younger grades. So really it should start at the beginning of when we're in school, right? How to be a good friend, how to consent, body autonomy, how to know how to trust adults, which adults to trust. That's what sex ed is when we're young. Mm-hmm. We don't even say the word sex. There's no talk of STIs or pregnancy. Maybe we might start talking about, you know, how babies are made, but of course, in an age-appropriate way. And so really, from the beginning of school is the short answer. Mm-hmm. But I think, like I said, that people really get confused because they're like, sex ed in first grade? No, just because they don't know what it is. And that's fair, right? Like, how would people know what sex ed at first grade looks like? Because most people never had sex ed at all, mm-hmm. let alone in elementary. So I think, you know, for me, in the profession, what is really important for me is that we get the word out to just your regular parents out there that are accountants and CEOs and all the things that have nothing to do with sex ed that just don't know. And we just teach them what it is.
So would you say it's most common that curriculums are being initiated in the sixth grade, or do you hear of it a lot in the elementary school level?
No. Yeah. No, it's okay. Very rare. We would want that to happen, but no, it usually starts fifth or sixth grade because of the puberty, right? And mm-hmm. so, and usually that's all it is puberty, especially in, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh grade at the middle grades, mm-hmm. If at all. But it's more common to have it at that time. And it's usually separated by sex assigned at birth. And it's very... I mean, there's so many schools that are still using the videos from like when I was in school and mm-hmm. what. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, yes, let's talk about actually the impetus for part of why I wanted to talk to you. And that mm-hmm. is that somebody recently sent their sex ed curriculum slides to me mm-hmm. and asked me for my thoughts. And in a nutshell, I thought it was really good. But some of the key phrases in the approach that were what I'm calling green flags were words mm-hmm. like, medically accurate, inclusive. It mm-hmm. was notable to me, and I flagged this with this person, that the presentation was neutral regarding gender. For example, referring to a person with a uterus or a person with a penis versus, mm-hmm. you know, a woman or a girl with a uterus and a man mm-hmm. with a penis. Whereas words like abstinence, for example, as a primary means of birth control, for me, that feels like a potential red flag. And actually, Dr. G, I don't know if you know this, but case in point, last year, when I went to curriculum night at the middle school in my city, I saw the health curriculum for middle school and I was like, whoa, this is super abstinence focused. Mm-hmm. And it led me to write to the district and then ultimately join a committee to revamp the curriculum. And I'm not a joiner a joiner like that. So it was pretty notable. I felt very strongly based on the work, you know, you and I have done together. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, long-winded way to get to my question of, are there other green or red flags that parents and caregivers should watch for as these curriculum are presented to them?
Yes. Abstinence only is a big red flag. Mm-hmm. And it's not that talking about abstinence is bad, right? Like that is an option and it can be taught in a very empowering way as an empowered choice. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right. I want to make that clarification.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So we do want to talk about that because that is one option young people have, but it shouldn't be the only thing folks talk about. So we don't want to see like abstinence only. You might also see abstinence plus. There might also be a word risk reduction. Mm-hmm. Type of models, separating by sex at birth, or sex assigned at birth, excuse me, is another red flag. Not to say that folks don't need affinity groups, but we want to have everyone together, during these lessons for at least most of them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so those are the big red flags for me. And a lot of shaming words, phrases like, well, what will your future, you know, partner, husband, wife think if you've had sex with X many people? Mm. They're going to think X, Y, and Z of you, right? That's a big thing we hear. There's a activity that's often done that's like a piece of bubble gum. And like they say, oh, who wants this piece of bubble gum that is already chewed, right? Like right. things like that, that mm-hmm. are really shaming to sexual activity. Those are all very, very red flags. And it's also important to see like who and where the curriculum is coming from, what type mm-hmm. of organization, right? Is this coming in from, you know, a religious organization? Is it coming from somewhere else? Like, it's really important to understand that and make sure that the curricula are, you know, research informed, research based, and see where they're actually being purchased from or where those, you know, organizations are coming from that are coming in to do it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, yes, I want to dig into that topic a little bit more, but we're going to take a quick break and then return to curriculum and some of the key issues to make sure are included. We'll be right back. People often talk about the impact of things like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrition on skin, but did you know those things impact your hair too? If you've been dealing with hair thinning, you are not alone, and Nutrafol is here to help. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding. I appreciate that they offer formulas tailored to different life stages, such as postpartum and menopause, as well as different lifestyles, such as plant-based diets. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol Women's Hair Growth Supplement for 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering Edit Your Life listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code EDIT. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. That's Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, and use promo code EDIT. That's Nutrafol.com using promo code EDIT. As you know, I am all about micro-improvements, and if you'd like to dedicate a little time each day to learn a language, I have a great solution for you. Babbel is a science-backed language learning app that offers 10-minute language lessons designed to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Materials are rooted in real-life situations, so you can learn important basics such as ordering food and asking for directions. Babbel offers personalized learning content, real-time feedback, tracking, and visualizations, and their speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. No matter what level you are looking for, casual, intense, or something in between, you can enjoy app lessons, podcasts, and live classes from the comfort of your home on your schedule. Here's a special limited-time deal for Edit Your Life listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription. This is only for Edit Your Life listeners at babbel.com/edit. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/edit. That's spelled babbel.com/edit. Rules and restrictions may apply. Hello, friends. We are back with Dr. Rachel Gibson, also known everywhere online as Dr. G. So let's talk about some of the key issues. So aside from the basics, and I will say that the person who sent me their curriculum, which I don't know what the timeline was for it. I don't know if it was a one-year curriculum or across multiple years, but I think they were a little overwhelmed by the scope. You know, there was the basic stuff like anatomy and puberty, and then there was stuff about gender identity, and that's what gave this person pause, just because it felt like a lot for their elementary school kid to process. So anyway, aside from basics like anatomy and puberty, what are some of the key issues that are important to include in a comprehensive sex ed curriculum? Notably, some of those issues might be under fire too.
Yeah. I mean, consent is a huge one. And healthy relationships is a huge one. Also, you know, depending on the age group, birth control methods, pregnancy options, those are all really important. Also, you know, preventing STIs, condom use, both internal and external condoms are all really important. I mean, and it is important to talk about orientation and identity, in those. And you talk about it differently depending on, you know, the age group you're working with, right? Like a fourth grade class and a 11th grade class are going to look, feel, and sound very different. But those are some of the big ones. And, you know, the ones that are under fire are always birth control, pregnancy options, preventing STIs, and now, you know, orientation and gender. And also, I would say, you know, when I first started teaching, the big three were, you can't talk about abortion, you can't talk about gay folks, and you can't talk about masturbation, right? Those were like the hot topics when I first started my career 25 years ago. And those are still, unfortunately, not much has changed, depending on where you are in the U.S.
It's a little shocking.
Yes, it is shocking yet not shocking at the same time, I think. You know, it's shocking yet not shocking. If we look at the history of sex ed and we look at the history of our country as related to sexuality in general, it's really not as shocking. It's just more unfortunate for our young folks that they're not getting what they need.
Right, right. And I will have called this out in the intro, but I do want to reference, since you mentioned masturbation, which is, you know, normal if you do, normal if you don't. But in my conversation with Melissa last week, you know, we talked about the importance of talking to kids about pleasure and why that matters and how that extends, I mean, to so many things in your life and in respectful relationships. So I, you know, parents are so often daunted by these conversations, you know, because we haven't, as you pointed out, had sex ed of our own or conversations, open conversations with our own families. And it's just so crucial to have them.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, and again, that's another one of these words that scares people, pleasure, like we're going to be teaching people how to masturbate, which is not what it is, right? And I think we live, you know, in general, in a very, in a society here in the US that is like anti-pleasure, right? We have a very do the things, you know, no matter what, X, Y, Z, you know. And as adults, we don't get to indulge in our own pleasure, whether it's the food we eat or with our sex, or the vacations we take, or all of those things that are pleasurable. And so when people hear that word pleasure, it automatically goes to this place of like harmful pornography or something that's going to happen, when that has nothing to do with it, right? It's just, you know, telling kids that if you do this, it's okay. It's not teaching them how to do it. And I often ask parents, when you think of what you want for your young person as an adult, do you want them to have enjoyable, pleasurable, consensual sex? Because chances are most likely they're going to have sex in some day in their life. Not everyone, but you know, most likely. So is that what you want them for them as an adult? Because, you know, parents can think of it as an adult. That doesn't just all of a sudden you're 25 and you're like, oh, great, right? It's a learning process about learning our bodies, especially for those of us who are socialized as girls. Often it's sex is a thing that happens to us, not that we participate in. And so think about, even for young girls, how life might change if we learn that sex is supposed to feel good for us, and it's not something that just happens, that we just have to lay there and fake it. Right now, I'm not saying we talk about that in fifth grade, but teaching people that it's okay to feel good in your body when they're young, right, rolls over to as they're in adulthood or when they begin, you know, initiating sexual behaviors.
100%. That's such an excellent point. I want to loop back to something you touched on before the break, and that is where a curriculum is coming from. So I only learned maybe a few years ago from direct experience in my city that special interest groups can impact curriculum adoption. Specifically, I was a little shocked, and then I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so naive. you know, for example, an abstinence-only promoting organization might provide a grant to a district to adopt their curriculum. And of course, that's very appealing if your district is in need of funds. So I'm not sure if this was a similar play, but in the curriculum that somebody sent me, it was sponsored by a menstrual products brand, which I flagged for them. But I said, you know, this, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but this does not bother me as much given that the general curriculum was inclusive and comprehensive. And because the resource list included books like those by Robie Harris. So I just felt like it had a lens that was comprehensive, and I felt okay with that. But I'm curious about your thoughts on this, because I don't really know the back end of curriculum sponsorship and that sort of thing. So what should people, is that a worrisome thing or not? I don't know.
So, you know, in the US, the process of adopting curricula for any subject is a messy web. And that really has to do, we don't have like federal guidelines for every state. Every district can do different things. It's a mess in general, right? So when you have these groups coming in, especially to schools that need money, then it's very like, okay, great. Of course we want $10,000, and you're going to give us this free curriculum, and you're going to teach it. And the thing is, most people don't know what sex ed is. So they're like, okay, great, right? They're not realizing that it could be harmful, right? It's that so many folks don't know what quality sex ed and or health ed should be, that when someone's like, hey, we're going to come in and do this great thing for you, regardless of who is doing it, the organization, they're like, that's great, because we don't know what it is, and nor do we want to do it, right? The majority of adults don't want to talk to kids about anything related to sex and sexuality, because they themselves, you know, have their own stuff. So it can be really challenging for schools and teachers and districts to know, you know, and they're not only choosing a sex ed curriculum, remember. There are so many curricula that they're going through these adoption processes, and there's bureaucracy, and there's things get just ignored or forgotten very easily. And that goes back to, you know, we don't have, depending on the state you're at, there aren't a lot of like, you must have sex ed, right? In some states there are, in some states there aren't, or you can't have it. But there's a lot of places where there's, you know, kids have to take so many tests and so many classes to graduate high school, and none of those are sex ed or health ed. So it just doesn't get, just doesn't happen. It's not a priority. And unfortunately, schools go where the money is. Right. So even like these huge textbooks companies, they write their textbooks based on the states that spend the most money with them.
Oh my goodness.
Right. Okay. So if you think of the big states, right? So if you think of like Texas, California, New York, right? Some of these very populous states. So if Texas is going to use, you know, X publisher book, and they've been buying it for so many years, that publisher writes the book in accordance with Texas law. Now, maybe a random school district in Colorado or Nebraska also buys it, but they write the book for the state that is their, that they want to adopt the textbook. And that happens across the board in education, whether we're talking about math, English, or sex ed. And then we now see also like smaller towns, smaller areas, school boards being taken over by, you know, these special interest groups that I'm not going to give any airtime to, right? That are very anti-sex ed, just because people don't know. They're like, okay, great. Or that person has the money, because people don't know. So like, okay, that sounds nice. Or you know what? Parents are working. They're busy. They're trusting the teachers to do it. And they don't have time to go to every school board meeting. And that's fair. Right? They should be able to trust schools to get the best thing. But unfortunately, we have, you know, a small group that is very anti-sex ed.
Yes.
but they are very powerful because they have money. And they are loud.
They're loud.
But yeah. It's a very small group. I don't think that's what people realize. It's a very small group. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but intimidating in the strength of their voice.
Exactly.
May I put you on the spot and ask, is there a curriculum or two that you would, if a parent wants to go and say, hey, would you consider mm-hmm. this? Is there something that you would recommend?
Of course. So the 3 R's curriculum from Advocates for Youth is an excellent curriculum. It is free and they work with school districts to tailor it to their, you know, local laws and things. So that's one great one. If depending on funding, some funding sources need a curriculum to be evidence informed, or some are evidence informed, some of them are evidence based. So for your listeners, that just is how we look at research, mm-hmm. right? So for some districts, it has to be evidence based. And so for those things from ETR, like Health Smart, Reducing the Risk, some of their curricula are really good. You know, they do cost money, but they're more public healthy. Mm-hmm. You know, public health and school health sometimes don't speak to each other. But so for places that need, you know, evidence based, and that's how like money and grants are funded, those are mm-hmm. some really great curricula. And then there's a lot of really great curricula about like singular topics mm-hmm. Within sex ed. For example, there's an organization called The Porn Conversation that has a great lesson plans about talking to young people about pornography and sexually explicit media. That is amazing. There is an organization. There's Dr. Eli Green, who wrote the book Teaching Transgender Toolkit. And it's a whole book of lessons specifically for trans inclusive education within sex ed. So that is another great one. So there are great people doing great things. In New York City, the New York City recently released an HIV curriculum. Mm. Because in New York State, there is a mandate that everyone has to have HIV education every year. So New York City Department of Education has further mandated that to a certain number of lessons and a very specific curricula. And so that curricula that came out is very great. California has a lot of stuff. The California Educational Framework for Health Education is stellar, and it includes a lot of really great stuff for sexual health in particularly.
Wow, this is amazing. I'm going to link everything in the show notes so that people can access it. I'm thrilled. So I'm glad I asked that follow-up because of course you had all the answers.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? There are good things happening. And so many times people are like, I'm going to write this curriculum. And I'm like, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm, there mm-hmm. are great things out there. It's more about getting people to know what it is and where you can find it how you facilitate it. We don't have to recreate the wheel. That's my least favorite thing to do.
Of course.
There's awesome stuff out there. And yes, of course, update things as needed. There are good curricula out there, and there's other ones that are in development that are coming out hopefully soon. You know what? I just thought of another one I want to add. Mm-hmm. The Unhushed curriculum is really great as well.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, I will add that to my link roundup. Now, I do want to ask you one question that you touched on very briefly. This is I feel very strongly about this issue, but I feel like I need the professional to come in and share their thoughts. Can you share why it is important to not split sex ed classes by gender?
Yeah, it's so great. Well, there's so many reasons. The first one is first of all, oftentimes we can't assume someone's gender identity, mm-hmm. right? And we may not know folks sex assigned at birth. So A, right? B, and I think this is really part of the crux of it, is every gender should know how all the body parts mm-hmm. work, regardless of what they have, mm-hmm. right? There is no reason why people with penises should grow up in the world and have no clue how a pad or a tampon work. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you've seen these funny TikTok reels with like it's very funny of girls like showing, making up these lies about their periods. And the guys are like, what? I didn't know that. They have no clue because they've never learned. And that's ridiculous. Right?
Like, it is ridiculous. Yes.
And you know, that's a funny example that I bring up, but there's no reason why we all should know how all the body parts work. And mm-hmm. it's cool. Bodies are cool, right? But also, we don't know who's in the room, and we really want to include everyone in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And we want to normalize these things, right? When we separate and take people behind closed doors and you're watching the secret period video, like, all you're doing is creating more secrecy and more myths and more trauma for folks. Like, mm-hmm. there is nothing wrong with a period. There is nothing wrong with a wet dream, right? All of these things are normal and happen to bodies. And so when we talk about it together, it reduces the stigma and shame that comes with this, like, hiding in the corner, ooh, secret thing. And it also includes all of our kids, mm-hmm. right? All of our young people. And they might be like, oh, wow, okay, that's my part. That's how it works. Okay, right? Mm-hmm. And it prevents this thing of either us making the harm that we put someone and misgender them and put them somewhere where they don't belong, or having to choose, right? Mm-hmm. And it's really unnecessary. And if you have a sex education that is done well, the kids will be fine. Mm-hmm. People often are like, they're going to be so embarrassed. I'm like, yeah, if you do it horribly. Mm-hmm. And also, it's okay to talk to young people and say, hey, we're talking about bodies. It might be funny. It's okay. We're all doing it together. Like, a good sex educator knows how to navigate and facilitate those conversations, and everyone's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it just normalizes it. Like, we shouldn't be out here like, periods, mm-hmm. you know, erections. You know, I'll never forget, you know, when I was in fifth grade and they split us up and everyone watched, you know, we watched the girls' ones, but then we also watched the boy videos. And I just have this image in my head of this kid who had, you know, a wet dream, a nocturnal emission, and stripped his bed at night and was like hiding his sheets in the hamper. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I remember from it. And that just further stigmatized it because we were away from the boys, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It yeah. made it more of a thing when in actuality, it doesn't have to be this big, shameful thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah. that's my thoughts on it. I mean, listen, I've only taught sex ed in mixed gender groups and it's always been fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% agree. Yeah. I needed the professional backing because I feel very yeah. strongly about it. And, you know, it's something that crops up repeatedly with parents. And I guess I just wanted to also take a moment to say that, you know, for any parent or caregiver who's listening and is feeling, you know, discomfort and not wanting to deal and all this stuff, I just want to like issue a little moment of compassion because that is coming from a place likely of being taught, you know, having the stigma perpetuated and the point was to make you feel uncomfortable and to feel bad about it. And mm-hmm. so like we can do better in this next generation to just make a more compassionate and inclusive environment. And that's really what I'm hoping these conversations are going to help do because it can be so much better.
Right. I mean, and I think that's so true, right? The kids are going to be all right, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. but the problem right now is all of us adults, because we were shamed mm-hmm. that we don't know. And we don't even realize that we're putting some of that shame on our young people. Yes. And that's not to fault parents, right? People are just doing the best they can. And like you said, we can do better. And there are curricula and there are amazing sex educators out there doing this work. So it is possible. The kids are going to be all right, but we got to allow them to be all right. We have to allow them the space to learn about their bodies in a shame-free way and to learn how to have healthy relationships and to talk about it and to practice the skills of the consent. We have to give them that space if we truly want them to be empowered people.
Mm, We'll put that on a quote card. I will.
Right? Bumper sticker.
Yeah, totally. All right, Dr. G, we're going to take another quick break and then we will be back to talk about next steps. Did you know that hyaluronic acid naturally occurs in our skin but decreases gradually as we age, leading to thinner, drier skin? If you're looking for support hydrating your skin from the inside out, check out one of the tools in my hydration arsenal, Rituals Hyacera, which I take every morning. Rituals products are tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals, and Hyacera is clinically proven to reduce fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. They also engage in industry-leading sustainability standards and are a female-founded B Corp, which means they hold themselves accountable to not just their company's financial health, but also the health of people and our planet. Want to join me in hydrating from the inside out? Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/edit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/edit for 25% off. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you struggle with boundaries and the general complexities of peopling? Relationships are necessary to our well-being, and some relationships are just, well, complicated. A good chunk of the work I have done in therapy centers on relationships, how to own my part of the story, how to let go of relationships that are toxic, and how to navigate challenging relationships in a way that doesn't drain me. And all of this work helps me show up better for myself and also as a partner, mom, friend, family member, and business owner. If you're thinking of starting therapy, check out BetterHelp. This online therapy platform was designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/edit today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/edit. Hello, friends. We are back with the wonderful Dr. G. And Dr. G, I wanted to ask you, so we've covered so many things and so many possibilities and so many wonderful potential good next steps in terms of what to look for and watch outs and all that. Mm-hmm. So if a parent or caregiver is concerned about the scope of their school's sex ed curriculum, or they have questions about sourcing or what have you, what do you think is a good, simple next step? Because I think it can be a little overwhelming for parents to like dive in.
Yeah, I think the first next step is for parents to pause and to really self-reflect on what's coming up for them when they are hearing that their young person is going to be having sex ed, and to self-reflect on why. Because a lot of it's from adults, our own traumas and our own stuff that's getting in the way. So I would always offer parents to first pause and self-reflect. Okay, what's coming up for me? Why is this bothering me? Mm-hmm. And then from there, the first thing I would do is just ask the teacher, hey, can you show me your curricula or tell me what curricula you're using or what topics? That's a very fair question. I've had, you know, when I talk in the classroom for 17 years, and I've had definitely have parents that, and that should not be a problem. It should be transparent. Like, this is what we're talking about. This is when it is, things like that. And oftentimes, even if it's a community organization that's coming in or some other educator, they will, you know, send a letter home to parents, say, hey, this is what we're talking about. So the first, just like ask the teacher a question, you know, in a nice way, because teachers have it rough, you know, so there's nothing wrong with asking your child's teacher, hey, I see that you're teaching sex ed. I'm totally interested in this. Can you tell me like what you're going to be talking about and, you know, where's the curriculum from? That's completely fine. And then there's different organizations you can follow, right? Like you can follow CECIS, you can follow Advocates for Youth and all of these places that have really great resources for parents that can like really guide you and say, okay, look for this, look for that. But I think the first step always is just asking the teacher, can you tell me what you're going to be covering? And if they say, well, we're going to be only talking about abstinence, or you know, then you might go to the next step. Okay, I need more information. Mm-hmm.
I think that's excellent. And I will say that when I was a little concerned when I saw the middle school program for health and was a little worried, I actually, I didn't realize I did it, but I think I did take that pause of, because I think I was ready to come in a little hot, and that isn't really a productive space for me. So I took some time and I wrote what I think was a very compassionate letter to the principal, and I looped in the health person. And they were, I was just so happy. They were immediately responsive, answered my questions. It ended up being, you know, a good dialogue. It got elevated to the district health, and then they ended up forming this committee. I'm not saying it's because of my letter, but the timing was pretty incredible. But you know, it was clearly a communicative process and very respectful. So I actually think I because I'm a total nerd, I developed a graphic about like how to write a compassionate email.
Oh,
about,
I love that.
Yeah, so I'll link that up. I think I did that on Instagram, but I just want to encourage that. You know, in this case, it translated to a bunch of committee work that I normally don't take on. But even just opening the conversation is a super important step, because I think, you know, the school wants to know that the parents are engaged and that they're part of the conversation, and they're looking for feedback, I think, anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Like, listen, I love how you said you were going to come in hot. And you know what? Parents, you should. You should be passionate about your child's education. I love that. And what is so important is kind of like remembering all these dynamics of the education system. Mm. When I was a teacher, I taught in New York City for 17 years, just so the listeners know. And I had several times parents ask me, hey, can you share this? And I always did. But the number one response when that happened was, what are you going to be talking about? And I shared it. They were like, oh, okay. Whew, I'm glad you're talking about it, because I don't want to. That was the number one response I had, is relief. But I say that because I also want parents to be having these conversations at home.
Yes.
Families should be where this starts, right? It shouldn't be that the only time your young person learns about erections and periods and puberty is in that sex ed class when they're split apart. Mm-hmm. That should not be the only time. They should have been known about puberty, you know, and all of these things. You know, I always say early and often. That's a common phrase we use in the field. So I offer parents, even if you're uncomfortable, it's okay. You can say to your young person, you know what? I'm feeling really uncomfortable, but this is so important. Mm. We're going to talk about it. And it's so important. I'm just want to check in with your teacher to make sure that what they're doing is going to be empowering for you. You know, and so I love parents coming in there and caregivers coming in and being like, what is this? And also have the conversations at home, as awkward as they are.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, Dr. G. Well, we've come to the end of our show, and I have one last little question for you.
Okay.
And at the end of each show, I ask my guest to share what is called your next edit. So this is a super actionable tip that listeners can consider doing right away after they finish listening to us. So whether it's something you've already covered or something new that we haven't covered, in the context of our conversation, I would love for you to share your next edit.
Yeah, I would say for folks to, one, email their young person's teacher and say, hey, are you going to be doing any type of sex ed? And if so, what is it? And then I would say for parents to seek out places where they can get their own sex ed. Because I think so many of us as adults didn't get sex ed, that oftentimes we're like, oh, is it? Okay, I learned a thing. So I would offer those two things. Reach out to the teacher. Build that relationship with the teacher before you get scared, right? Before it's something that just pops up. And then do some learning for yourself to kind of work around our own stuff related to sex ed. So when it comes to talking with your young people, it becomes less awkward. awkward.
I love it. Thank you so much, Dr. G, for your time and your expertise and your just sort of loving, compassionate presence online. I really appreciate what you do for so many. And I'm just thrilled that we got to have this conversation today.
Yes. Thanks so much. It was so great being here. And I'm giving my love to all your listeners because I know it's not easy. So just have some love for yourself and it'll all be okay.
Perfect. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Friends, wasn't that conversation amazing? Are you inspired to take action both for yourself and at school? I love Dr. G and I thought it was wonderful. You'll find the show notes for this episode, including links to resources and related episodes at edityourlifeshow.com. As ever, I would love to hear your thoughts and questions. Come say hello on Instagram or Facebook at Edit Your Life Show, or send an email to edityourlifeshow@gmail.com. I would also be grateful if you would drop Edit Your Life a review on Apple Podcasts or tell a pod-loving friend about the show. Thanks for listening.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.